fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. We will tackle some of the biggest headlines from the world of mixed martial arts. And if you've been living under a rock, you don't know about John Jones and Daniel Cormier. We'll touch on that and much, much more with Yahoo Sports' Kevin Ioli. We'll also hear from Lex McMahon, one of the industry's mover and shakers, to get his thoughts on a variety of issues, as well as some of the fighters that are under his banner with Alchemist Management. But we kick things off with a winner of The Ultimate Fighter, the real deal, Ross Pearson. Mr. Pearson, how are you today?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks for asking. I mean, in terms of the situation, obviously a change in opponent almost last minute, but reading some of the stuff that you've been saying, it's almost a benefit for a guy like yourself to take on Gray Maynard, despite him being higher in the rankings, because he was training for somebody else that's a completely different opponent than you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, once you get opportunities like this in this sport, you can't turn them down, you know. These opportunities don't come around very often, you know. So as soon as Joe Silva offered me the fight, I jumped at it, you know. Of course, I wanted to fight. And for me, in this fight, stylistically and what I wanted to do, didn't really change too much of how my preparation has been going already. I think the preparation for Gray has kind of changed drastically in his last week, you know. So he will be chopping and changing things around, everything what he's done, because I'm a completely different fighter to what Fabricio was, you know. It's a different game plan going into the fight, you know, and yeah, so I'm definitely comfortable with the change. I'm definitely comfortable fighting Gray, and I think it'll be a great night for me.
Can you walk me through perhaps the emotional roller coaster that when you first got the call that Abe was out, and then B, they offered you Gray Maynard?
Like a kid at Christmas, like someone had just given everything I'd ever wanted, you know. I mean, I was looking at the Gray Maynard fight after the Abel fight, you know. I was kind of hoping he won that fight, and then I'd beat Abel, and I'd move on and maybe look at the NBA to fight Gray. So I was kind of had Gray in the back of my mind, and once my manager called me up and said Abel's out, obviously I was down, and then 2 minutes later, let's fight Gray, and I was like a kid at Christmas, you know, like excited, and I'll do it. I didn't even contact my coaches. I was like that determined. I was like, I'm doing it. Put my name in the hat. I'm there 100%. So I was a little bit rushed, and I didn't think about it at all. I just jumped straight at it.
Well, it's almost funny. You stole the next question right out of my mouth, because it's one thing when a fighter and a manager agree to a fight. Now you've got to break the news to the coaching staff. What was their take?
Yeah, you know, Eric definitely has a little love drama, so he's pretty good at handling drama. He's a firefighter. So once I laid it down, he was cool with it. Just a couple of little things he wanted to tweak in what we've been doing, and a couple of tactics that we've been drilling, and wanted to change them around a little bit. But he said exactly how I said it. That's the great thing about me and Eric. We see fights very similar, and we've got a very similar fight mind. So as soon as he started talking, like, I understood straight away. We changed ideas. He liked it, and yeah, everything's perfect. We're good to go.
We're in conversation with Ross Pearson, the real deal. Make sure you follow him on Twitter via Twitter, online at Ross the Real Deal. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. Now, this training camp was done in England, as opposed to sometimes doing it overseas in the United States. Why the reason to do it in England?
Well, I was originally scheduled to fight Abel with only a 4-week training camp, and to travel 13 hours to San Diego, then travel 6 hours back in 4 weeks, just felt like a lot of traveling on my body, and I would be missing out days here, days there, and in such a short camp. I didn't want to be missing any days. I wanted to get as much as I could in this camp in the short period of time that I had. So we all as a team decided that I'd stay home and I'd bring guys in to me, you know. So it's worked out perfectly. I've been in contact with pretty much every day of training camp, and he knows where I'm at, he knows what I'm doing, And we've been filming and recording all my training sessions. I've been sending it over to him. So he's been informed and monitoring everything, and he knows where I'm at. And it's actually been a great camp that I've had at home.
Now, I've spoken to a few guys who are competing on the same card as yourself, and the theme, the common theme is obvious. You're fighting in Dana White's hometown in Bangor, Maine. Does that add any pressure, or does it add motivation when you step into the octagon?
I honestly didn't even know. You just told us. not at all to me. Fighting in someone else's backyard has never affected me before. Fighting in Dana's hometown, I'm pretty sure it won't affect us. I'll be the same Russ Pearson, whether I'm fighting in England, whether I'm fighting in America, whether I'm fighting in Brazil, Australia. I always turn up in the fights, and I just fight. So I've come to put a show on for the fans, and I hope the fans enjoy it. I hope Dana enjoys it. I get a nice big bonus afterwards with a knockout.
I was just going to ask you, what do you feel, what would you like to be your Hollywood script perfect fight versus Gray Maynard?
Obviously, I would like to land that big left hook, but actually, I would like to put on a display and show that I can kick someone apart, I can create angles, I can transition well in mixed martial arts, and just outclass them to the finish, and that's what I'm going to Hollywood. It's going to be stylish, slick, fast, and look good at doing it. You know, make sure it looks effortless. You know, when people watch this fight, you know, it's not like I'm trying too hard to do something what's not actually working. I just want it to flow like water, you know, just be effortless and look good doing it.
Well, you looked fantastic in the Diego Sanchez fight, except for, I guess, two or three people that were sitting cage side that decided otherwise. Have you gotten over that scenario, or is there something inside you that says, oh, that's just not right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's always gonna be brought up, so it's hard to forget about. You know, a lot of people are still talking about it. Coming out of that fight, I knew 100% that I won that fight, no matter what nobody said, you know. It's just let a fire crackle underneath my arse, you know, just to finish fights, not let it get to that point again, you know. The first time I fought in Brazil, I fought Edson Barboza, and it was a close fight, and I kind of expected a little bit of a hometown victory, you know, so I was comfortable with that. And then going into Diego's hometown, I knew I had to finish him or outclass him everywhere, and unfortunately the finish didn't come, but I outclassed him, and I don't even think I got hit in that fight. I controlled everything, I took the fight exactly where I wanted to go, and I won every round, you know. So it's just a little bit disappointing from what the judges thought they saw or whatever happened, because that's on my record now. But at the end of the day, I'm still carrying that momentum, knowing that I can go in there with the top names in the division and beat them pretty comfortably.
Well, you're a good man for thinking that way, because I mean, I'm blessed to be a certified judge and a referee, and when I saw that, you know, quote unquote debacle, it kind of broke my heart for all the work that you put in there, and that's in no disrespect to Diego Sanchez, a guy like just as much as you. It's just very difficult to watch. But yeah, it was almost comical a few weeks later, or maybe about a couple weeks ago actually, Dan Hardy, one of your fellow countrymen, said he'd like to come back and retire Diego Sanchez, if not for what happened and the way he reacted after that fight. What do you make of the Outlaw's comments?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think everyone would want to see Dan back, you know, but it's a great fight, you know. Diego Sanchez is a tough fight for anyone. It doesn't matter if you're welterweight, middleweight, anyone on the planet, Diego Sanchez is a tough fight for anyone. And I don't think it's a reason to fight him just because of the decision the judges threw my fight. If anything, it should be me fighting him again for what the judges. I don't need anyone fighting my battles, you know. But hey, listen, if he wants to come and fight Diego, I would like to see that fight, you know. I think Dan has still got a lot to show in this sport, and if he comes back, great. I'd love to see him back, and hopefully one day he will be back and back to full health.
I would love to see it, especially considering the situation he's having with some of the doctors. They won't let him fight. Some will let him fight. So hopefully he can clear that up. In speaking to Dan, in speaking to guys like Michael Bisping, and now I've got you on the line, the one thing a lot of the Brits tell me is, Joe, you don't understand what's happening with the scene in England. It is just absolutely exploding, and the talent level is fantastic. It's getting better and better almost by the week. You mentioned in an interview with Gareth Davies that you've got a bullseye on your back when you go back home and train. What's that like?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's all I've ever wanted, and I wish I had this type of training 10 years ago, because God knows what kind of fighter I'd be now, you know. I can actually stay at home a little bit longer and train with the guys I've got here, because the level of talent that I've got here in my hometown of Newcastle is it's unbelievable, you know. I've got great training partners. I've got wrestlers. I've got grapplers. I've got strikers. We've always got a lot of striking, but we've got great butchers now. Peter Irvin is a former MMA fighter. He's actually taking head charge of the team, and he's doing a great job, and we've got a solid team together. You know, we bounce off each other, we work hard, we have fun, and it makes the training sessions worthwhile.
Final question for you before I let you go is, I was asked on the television side of UFC Central my opinion on what happened with Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier, and having spoken to both those two guys over the past few years, I knew there was a lot of bad blood there. You just never really saw it in the media, but then they finally meet head-to-head. You know, we know what it's like backstage, Ross. It's tend to be cordial. Sometimes guys are puffing out their chest, but when you get in front of the cameras, it's completely different, and with Jon Jones stepping in there with his head, Daniel not wanting to back down, we saw what happened afterward as all hell breaks loose. Daniel's kid was there, and children are watching this. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was sad to see for the sport, you know. I know for a fact both of them definitely regret what they've done, especially Daniel Cormier and having his son seen him there in upstage street fighting. You know, it's not setting an example to young kids, to fight fans and the people around the world. You know, it just looks bad. So I mean, obviously I'm a fighter. I understand exactly the emotions of what they're feeling, because believers, I've felt like I've wanted to do that myself, you know, but there's a time and a place for it, and that's inside the octagon, and you shouldn't put your hands on another opponent, and it should never get like that. Pre-post or whatever a fight, it's the 15 minutes or 25 minutes inside the octagon. That's your time to go to work, you know. Everything else is business and being a professional athlete outside the octagon.
Listen, we want to thank you very much for your time. I want to wish you the best of luck. Your fight will broadcast coast to coast across Canada on Sportsnet 360. The Real Deal, Ross Pearson. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having us, guys.
There you have it. Ross, the Real Deal Pearson, taking on Gray Maynard next Saturday night on Sportsnet 360 in the co-main event, headlined by Ryan Bader and Owen Simpro. All right, let's move forward now to Lex McMahon, a guy I've known for quite some time and one of the movers and shakers in this industry. Mr. McMahon, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. How you doing, buddy? Always great to speak to you.
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I feel like I should be putting on some Ric Flair music for you, because you're jet-setting now. You're all over the place. I mean, where are you now?
Well, right now, it's been a busy couple of days. In the last week, I was in Los Angeles to see Brendan Schaub and negotiate a couple new deals with Fox Sports for his podcast, The Fighter and the Kid, and then also a new sponsorship deal, and jump on a plane, headed out, and went to our family lake house out in East Texas for a couple of days with the family, and then off to Austin to do a site visit for our Titan FC 30 event, which is going to be Austin, Texas, September 26th. Now I'm on a plane with the incomparable Mr. Eric Talent, our executive producer, headed out to Fayetteville to do our site visit for our upcoming August 22nd show in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Well, please give my best to Eric. He's one of the good guys in this industry. I miss him from back in the old UFC days, but it's all good. I'm sure he's doing very well right now.
Yeah, no, he's the best. We love having him on board and leading the production charge for us.
Well, the whole Titan CEO situation, that came about pretty quickly. I don't think anyone saw that coming. How is that going for you?
Well, don't promote me just yet. I'm only the COO, not the CEO.
A COO?
Yeah.
All right, well, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, but it's, you know, it was one of those things. You know, I've been in this industry going on 6 years now. seen a lot, done it from every aspect, from, you know, just doing sponsorships for promotion or for sponsors, connecting them to athletes and promotions, to obviously starting Alchemist with my partners, Nima Safafour, MC Hammer, and Jeff Aronson. And really, you know, getting to work with some of the finest athletes in the sport, to, you know, having an opportunity to further evolve and grow, you know, my own personal skill sets and experiences. You know, negotiating with CBS Sports, the arenas, dealing with the athletes in a slightly different manner. You know, it's an incredible experience. I'm learning every day, and I'm constantly, you know, adding income to the bottom line so that I can further take care of my family.
Absolutely. Now, in terms of the reason why I wanted to contact you, is obviously a State of the Union address, because you have so many things going on and so many athletes under the Alchemist banner. First things first, though, Stefan Struve, how is he doing right now?
You know, he's doing well. He is training again. He's trying to, you know, decide when he will be ready to return. He plans on returning, but I do know that, you know, our entire team, you know, Nima Safafour is my partner and you know, runs point with Stefan, and, you know, I help out when I can. You know, the whole team, his coaches, everybody, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, the next steps for him. But we've spoken with the UFC, and they're supportive, and they're, you know, they want to see him return to competition if it's what he wants, and if he's healthy. We know he's healthy. And so now it's just making getting his mind to a place where it's healthy and where he's comfortable to compete again.
And speaking of guys being comfortable to compete again, Rory McDonald's headlining a show in Halifax as the Ultimate Fighting Championship makes their debut on Canada's East Coast. Rory Mack taking on Tariq Saifedean. Your thoughts on that fight for Rory?
You know, listen, Tariq's a top 10 opponent. He's a top opponent. He's, you know, he handily beat one of my other top clients, Nate Marquardt, who I've long considered as one of the top fighters, you know, in the division. Rory is at the top of the division. He really should be fighting for a title fight, but you look at the way the division is stacked up right now, Rory's either defeated or lost to everybody else in the top 10. And, you know, the title fight situation is what it is with Robbie fighting Johnny next. So, instead of staying inactive, you know, Rory wanted to compete, and the UFC was, you know, kind enough to present him with an opportunity to headline in Canada, which will really help build his brand up and kind of help him, you know, further, you know, be cemented as Canada's number one star when it comes to mixed martial arts. And, you know, so it's a great opportunity. We're excited for it. I think it's a very winnable fight for him. I think he matches up incredibly well with Tariq, so he obviously has to be cognizant and respectful of Tariq's strengths.
In terms of Rory headlining a show, though, it's one of those things where I wonder if it's bittersweet for the youngster, because, you know, we heard in the last post-fight press conference how he says he doesn't want to be a superstar, he just wants a fight, but now he's headlining a show, so some of that burden falls onto his shoulders. Is that something that he's looking at and saying, you know what, this is something that I'm going to have to do moving forward if I want to become a world champion in the sport?
Listen, it's a reality. You and I have, you know, both been around Rory for quite some time now, and you've seen his growth and maturation. You know, I think he understands he has a responsibility to the UFC, to his fans, and frankly to himself, to put himself in the best position possible. And you know, even though he doesn't love it, that part of it is being out and engaging, you know, with the media and being involved more in the marketing push. At the end of the day, this is a business, and Rory's responsibility is not just to fight, but to help promote, to put butts in seats, and even sell pay-per-views.
We're in conversation right now with Lex McMahon. You can follow Lex online via Twitter at Lex McMahon MMA. He is the president of Alchemist MMA and COO of Titan FC. Now, you did mention Nate Marquardt, Lex. How is he doing right now, considering there was a lot of pressure in that fight versus James Tahuna, yet he came out in spades and looked absolutely fantastic?
Yeah, he did look fantastic, and it was great. You know, I flew over to be with him in New Zealand, and just a special experience. He, you know, he had a rough couple of fights, which, you know, in this sport is not uncommon. But, I really consider Nate to be one of the top mixed martial artists in his division, and it was great to see him return to form. You know, he's spending time with his family right now, waiting for what the next opportunity the UFC presents, but I'm sure it'll be something that'll be high profile and sitting with an athlete of his stature.
Now, I'm not a jet setter like you or Dana White or the likes of Frank Trigg, but my next travel schedule will be to Sacramento, and I'll get to see Danny Castillo take on Tony Ferguson. Last call, Danny Castillo, one of my favorite guys in this industry, always brings a smile to my face, but I'm sure right now he is barreling down with the likes of Dwayne Ludwig and the other guys at Team Alpha Male getting ready for this fight. How is Danny doing?
Danny's doing phenomenal, and thank you for asking. You know, he's one of my favorite guys as well. He's got a tremendous heart, and you know, there's a lot that people don't know about him. The fact that he will just drive around town and you know, sit down and spend time talking and engaging with homeless people, bringing them food, and just getting to know them. You know, he's a business owner. He owns a Hot Pilates studio in Sacramento that's doing tremendous PTO Hot Pilates. You know, there's more to him than being just a fighter, which is, I think, really fun to see. But right now, he's all fighter. He's really digging in and training hard. And I think that we're going to see a really focused Danny Castillo come August 30th. You know, I appreciate you bringing him on the air soon to talk to him, because he's always a fun interview, as you know.
Oh, for sure. I'm looking. If we can get him on next week, I'd be absolutely thrilled. But one guy who's competing a few days later under your banner, a guy who's very stoic and rarely shows emotions, but something tells me he's not going to be a very happy camper when he gets in there with Jacare Souza, because this is a rematch that is years in the making. Gegard Mousasi, the dream catcher, how is he doing?
Gegard's doing tremendous. You know, again, that's one of the athletes under the Alpha banner that I work in concert with my partner Nima. He runs the point with Gegard, but I'm obviously advised of what's going on, and I know he's training hard and very focused, and like you said, he's got his hands full. It's a different matchup. You know, someone who's absolutely world-class on the ground, and Jacare, who's evolved considerably into a very well-rounded striker. But let's be honest, Gegard is tremendously well-rounded and significantly better on his feet. So I think it's a good matchup, but he's got to play a smart game and stick to his game plan.
Now, you mentioned Brendan Schaub a little earlier on the show, and I'm kind of concerned because I was there for the fight versus Arlovski. I did score the fight for Brendan, and very emotional afterwards. You know, how's he doing considering that whole situation? Because that should have been a W, in my opinion, on his record. But, you know, what's his status right now? And, you know, when do you see him coming back to the cage?
You know, we're working on it. And I think, you know, I agree as well. It should have been a win. But, you know, here's the reality is there were some things that were close. Statistically, you know, by the numbers, he certainly should have prevailed. But he also, you know, allowed it to go to the judges, and there were some elements to the fight that were close. So, you know, that's the sport, right? It's never easy. And you know, as Bert Watson always says, never let it go to the judges, baby. They make you cry every time. And it's true. But Brendan's rebounded after, you know, 2 days of, you know, trying to figure out what happened. You know, he's back on his horse, and he's training hard and focused in on training and just getting ready for the next opportunity. We don't know what that's going to be yet. We're targeting, hopefully, in October, November timeframe for his next fight. You know, we're chatting with UFC and Joe Silva on a pretty regular basis about some possible matchups. So we'll see what develops there. You know, in the meantime, he's doing an amazing job building up his brand and his podcast and the Fighter and the Kid podcast and, you know, all the other, you know, things that he's engaged in. So I'm really proud of him. You know, losing is never easy, and Brendan is one of those athletes who takes it very hard. But he's really showing tremendous amount of maturity and evolved considerably over, you know, over the years that I've been with him, which is about 5 years now. And he's doing a lot of great stuff outside the octagon.
Absolutely. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I may have seen it on his Twitter feed or someone's Twitter feed, Todd Duffy has resumed training. Is Todd going to be returning anytime soon?
You know, I think so. He is training, and, you know, we let the UFC know that he's ready to fight. But, you know, he does need, because he's been out for some time, he needs the benefit of having, you know, as full a camp as possible. Not always easy given the realities of the UFC, but we're hopeful that he gets something, you know, in late fall, early winter, you know, or the beginning of next year.
Well, there's so many more people on this roster I'd like to talk about, from Beck Hyatt on the upcoming Ultimate Fighter, Liz Carmouche, Jake Shields taking on Ryan Ford, the Wonder Boy taking on Patrick Cote, Nordine Tlaib, one of Canada's best-kept secrets, has to have a fight coming up soon, as well as Costa Philippou and Jimmy Manoa. Well, I mean, there's a lot of names right there. You don't have enough time, but any thoughts on those guys or girls?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for everybody. They're all doing tremendously well. Wonder Boy, I think that's one of the most intriguing fights of all the fighters that you've mentioned. Wonder Boy has been, touted as one of the best strikers in the world, I believe he is. Pat is certainly, a guy who's made his bones over the years, as a striker. So I think it's going to be a fun fight. I think it's a fight that Wonder Boy will excel in, but, Pat's crafty, man. He's fought for the title. He's been around a long time, and he's very technical in his striking. So it's definitely going to be, I think, a fun fight for the fans. And that's one of the things that, obviously you want your guy to win, but always hope for a great fight for the fans. And I think this fight will certainly provide that.
Well, there's never enough time to have you on the air. I wish I could do a full hour with you, but I know you've got to get some food in your stomach because you got another flight to catch. And I'm hoping to run into you in Sacramento and Vegas or wherever our travels meet.
My friend, it's always a pleasure to see you, and we'll definitely make a point to see one another in fact, for sure.
There you have it, Lex McMahon. All right, coming up after the break, we will tackle some of the biggest headlines in the world of mixed martial arts with Yahoo Sports' Kevin Ioli. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Let's not waste any time because the headlines in mixed martial arts have been coming fast and furious. So we welcome Yahoo Sports' Kevin Ioli to UFC Central. Mr. Ioli, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, anytime. Really, really appreciate it, considering that there's so many headlines over the past 7 days or so in the world of mixed martial arts. Obviously, the biggest one with Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier and their scuffle at the MGM Grand. Were you there present when that went down?
I actually was not there. I had something else going on that day, so I wasn't there. So I had to play catch-up when I heard what happened.
Now, in terms of what went down, I mean, obviously, John Bones Jones comes in there, kind of puts his head down on a Daniel Cormier. Cormier reacts by giving him sort of a throat chop, and then, all hell breaks loose from there. It's not a good look for mixed martial arts in general, especially for the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Your thoughts after it all went down and the dust settled?
Joe, I mean, I agree with you. It's not a good look. It's not what you want from these guys. And everybody connected with the UFC and with mixed martial arts in general would tell you, MMA fighters are different than the average athlete, especially the average fighter. And then to see that, kind of says, well, maybe they're not any different. But I also don't want to just go too overboard and condemn them. I mean, they're fighters. This kind of stuff happened. To me, the biggest problem was the fact that somebody could have really gotten hurt and it could have put the fight in jeopardy. I mean, they were on a 3-foot-high stage and they fell off. I mean, and, turn an ankle or a knee, Daniel Cormier is going to fight with a bad knee. That, to me, was the big thing. I mean, I don't want to make more of it than it was. I know a lot of people were excited to see it and they said that they're going to buy the pay-per-view. I don't really think it's going to have an impact one way or the other. There's going to be some people who will buy it now that wouldn't have bought it because of this brawl. There's going to be other people who were turned off by it. I think it's all going to come out in the wash. I think the bad thing is you don't want to have this happening too often because guys don't get paid when they don't fight. And I guarantee you, if you keep doing this, Joe, somebody's going to get hurt and the fight's going to be canceled.
In terms of the actual commission themselves, though, should they step in there and perhaps fine the two gentlemen or at least do something in terms of a suspension? I'm just trying to wrap my head around it because, these are prize fighters. They are paid to compete inside of a cage or in a ring. They did so outside of it.
Yeah, of course they should be fined, and they will. There's going to be some penalty. I think it's going to be a fine, but, there will be a penalty. The commission's going to weigh in on this. And I'll tell you why. I mean, even though I said a second ago, not that huge of a deal in the grand scheme of things, the one thing that happened was this was in public where they spill right into the public area. And imagine if a member of the public that had come to the press conference had been standing there and these guys had fallen on top of them and punched one of them. There could be massive consequences. So, of course, there is a rule that gives the Nevada Athletic Commission the ability to punish anybody involved with the game if they bring ill repute to the sport. Well, clearly that brought ill repute to the sport, so there's going to be some kind of punishment. I think you'll see the UFC and the commission work closely together. I do think Zuffa is going to penalize them as well. You saw the statement that Kirk Hendrick put out the other day. Daniel Cormier said at yesterday's press conference in L.A., he talked to Lorenzo Fertitta, and Lorenzo was not happy. So the fact that Lorenzo wasn't happy, the statements that Kirk Hendrick put out, and the fact that the Athletic Commission is going to review it, I think you know there's going to be penalties all around.
Well, from ill repute to the sport to an interesting injection into mixed martial arts, Manny Pacquiao has purchased some shares from ONE FC. Your thoughts on that? I think it's an interesting dynamic to see what could happen over out there in Asia.
I think it's great for ONE FC. I really do, because you know Manny Pacquiao is a, you know, Victor Kui called him a global icon, Joe, and I think that's true. But it's really an icon in the Asian market and in the Philippine market, where ONE FC is already very big, and Manny Pacquiao's inclusion in this is going to help them dramatically, and I think it's going to raise awareness about mixed martial arts and ONE FC in particular throughout the region where they do business. And I think it's a very, very good thing for them. And, you know, I like what ONE FC is doing. They have a very good business plan. They're doing a lot of really good things in that market down there. And I think they're advancing the sport of mixed martial arts throughout Asia, which is only going to help the worldwide market as a whole going forward.
In conversation right now with Kevin Ioli. Make sure you follow Kevin online via Twitter at Kevin I. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. Now, to be a fly on the wall when Lorenzo Fertitta, Dana White, and the UFC brass must have first heard this news, what do you think went through their mind considering Mark Fisher's doing what he has to do out there in the Asian market?
Well, you know, I don't think that they're too worried about that. I mean, you know, they're going to be in Asia and do some shows, but I don't think that they look at Asia as like the, you know, their home base. I mean, for ONE FC, like, this is their home base. This is where they're going to put on all their shows. They're not looking to go to other places. You know, UFC is looking to put on a few shows a year and have some success in Asia. So I think it's complimentary. I mean, look, you know, Zuffa needs help. You know, Zuffa needs places where talented fighters are going to be developed. And so if there are talented Asian fighters being developed in ONE FC, hey, when they get to that level, the UFC can use them and put them on. That's a great thing for them. And then secondarily, I think they need help spreading the word. You know, one of the problems, you know, has been that, you know, most of the promotions out there haven't really done much. You know, you think of the whole battle to get into New York. You know, what has any other promotion done to try to open up New York? You know, Zuffa has spent tens of millions of dollars, and none of the other promoters out there have done anything. So the fact that ONE FC and Victor Kui are in Asia and they brought Manny Pacquiao aboard, I think will help the Asian market. It will make it a good market even better. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta are going to be thankful to them for what they've done.
And speaking of helping the market, Anderson Silva's coming back in 2015, taking on Nick Diaz. We'll dissect both two guys in a minute. We'll start off with Anderson, though. I have a little concern in terms of Anderson's shin with a titanium rod in there, and I also am wondering mentally how he was going to feel when he takes on Nick Diaz, and should he throw a kick and then begin to feel some pain in that leg. I mean, it's going to be a very difficult mental hurdle, not just physical for Anderson to come back, but a mental one once he gets back into the cage. First things first, the spider returning, obviously very good for the sport.
I think it's great for the sport. I mean, you know, you have two guys returning, but Anderson Silva is certainly one of the biggest stars, had become one of the biggest stars in the UFC. Anderson had a weird dynamic, Joe, and I know you saw this over the years. You know, when he first became the middleweight champion, for quite a long while, even though he was so dominant, you know, he wasn't a big ticket seller, he wasn't a big pay-per-view guy, and all of a sudden it was like, boom, you know, he burst out and became this massive, you know, I mentioned Manny Pacquiao was a global superstar, and that's exactly what Anderson Silva became, and, you know, it sort of, you know, just was like a rocket that just launched off, and he became this massive star. So to bring him back, I think that was huge. And when you look, you know, I got a lot of criticism for a column I wrote when I talked about the UFC's global strategy. And a lot of the criticism that people said was, well, yeah, the cards are all watered down. No, what it was you had guys like Anderson Silva, Cain Velasquez, Nick Diaz, George St. Pierre, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, who weren't fighting. And now some of those guys are starting to come back. And in this particular event that we're talking about, Joe, there's two of them. You know, Nick and Anderson are both coming back. I think that's why you're seeing the end of the year on the UFC schedule all of a sudden looking so entertaining.
And, of course, Nick Diaz returning in general. You know, any Nick Diaz press conference or pre-fight conference call are absolutely, I mean, borderline hilarious to borderline fantastic, because he's as real as they come. He doesn't even put on a facade. He is who he is. What do you anticipate as we get closer to this bout?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be an unbelievably compelling fight. I mean, I think this is one of those things, because there's so many questions here. You know, on the surface, you would say if Anderson Silva and Nick Diaz had met and there was no break, no injury, you know, both at their prime, you know, this would be a pretty easy win for Anderson Silva. I think, you know, he's a bigger guy, stronger guy. He's got a lot going for him. You know, I like his style better. I think he would win the fight. But there's a lot of intrigue on both ends of this, and I think that's what makes it such a fascinating fight. Forget Anderson coming back from the broken leg, which is a huge issue in this fight, but he's also getting close to 40 years old. Yeah, and there's an old saying in the fight game, hey, a fighter can get old overnight. Now, how do we know that Anderson didn't get old overnight, that he's now going to show his age? Nick Diaz has been off, you know, it'll be close to 2 years by the time he gets back in the cage. That has to affect him. How will that affect him against somebody like Anderson Silva? How is Anderson going to feel, as you said, when he kicks the first time? How is Nick going to feel when he's in there against a guy that may be 220 pounds walking around on the street? I mean, there's so many angles in this that I think it just makes for a fascinating fight overall.
Fascinating in terms of the Diaz brothers, because Nick has now signed with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, while Nate Diaz is also signed but refuses to compete. Do you think this opens the door for Nate to finally come back, or is it the situation where, look, they're under different management, each guy has their own way of dealing with things, and Nate may not be coming back for quite some time?
You know, I just think that this is a confounding thing, and I think that the brothers are very similar in this regard, even though they have their own management. You never know what either one of them is going to do. And, you know, to a degree, what they've done has worked because, you know, look, Nick says, I only want to fight big fights, and he wants to fight title fights and, you know, main events. And he's been able to pull that off. You know, this is a guy that, look, he's lost two fights in a row. He fought for the interim title. He loses to Carlos Condit. It comes back, fights for the full title, loses to George St. Pierre. He wants a rematch with George St. Pierre, and Dana says, you lost every minute of every run. Are you crazy? He sits out. Now what happens? He comes back and he gets an Anderson Silva fight. So you have to say that his strategy is working. You know, Nate hasn't been as successful. And Nate's not as talented a fighter as his brother. You know, not quite as good. Nate is a very good fighter. You know, Nick is one of the best guys in the world. Nate's just a little bit lower than him. So I don't know that that strategy is going to work as well with Nate, but we'll have to wait and see.
Speaking of waiting and seeing, I don't know if the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Kevin, does have jurisdiction over grappling events, and they've already made it known that they may be stepping in with the whole Chael Sonnen competing in the Metamoris competition. I don't think they have jurisdiction because it is not considered unarmed combat. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I seem to feel the same way, and I have mixed feelings. You know, I hate fighters who cheat, then trying to find ways around the rules. And Chael flat out cheated. He admitted it. I mean, and he cheated in a major, epic way. I mean, so nobody should be defending this guy because of what he did. But that, by the same token, you know, everybody deserves a chance to make a living, and you just can't take his entire living away from him at all. And this is not regulated in California. It's not regulated in Nevada. You know, so I think Nevada is the one that made the mistake, because they claim they didn't want him to fight in any kind of sporting competition, whatever it was, but they didn't specify that during the hearing. So, you know, it was things that they licensed. So, yes, you can't see Chael in a boxing match. You can't see him in an MMA fight. You can't see him in a kickboxing match. Anything that Nevada regulates, you can't see him in. But the fact that they don't do grappling, I think it's a totally different thing. I'm sure there's going to come to a head here in a second, but I don't think that Nevada's really going to have a leg to stand on in this case. I like what they're trying to do, but I think in this case, Joe, they've overstepped their bounds.
Last time I was in Las Vegas, we were able to join Gareth Davies in his podcast, and we spoke a little bit about Conor McGregor. The three of us basically having different views. Conor McGregor now taking on Dustin Poirier in the co-main event for UFC 178. Is this the test that is required for a guy like Conor McGregor? The same with Matt Brown when he took on Robbie Lawler, that this will perhaps convince everyone, you know what, with a victory over Dustin Poirier, you know what, this kid is the real deal?
Well,
I think so. I mean, you know, I like Connor when I first saw him against Marcus Brimage. But then I say, hey, you know, and I no disrespect to Marcus Brimage. Marcus Brimage is not one of the best 145s in the world. So you say, okay, you know, there that was. Then he beats Max Holloway in a fight. You know, Max Holloway to me was a much better threat. But again, Max Holloway wasn't a guy that you looked at and said, hey, he's on the verge of competing for the title. So there were still questions about him. And then he goes into his next fight against Diego Brandão. Same question came up. You know, Diego, a tough guy, but still not there. So, and Connor's talking about main eventing and fighting for titles when these are the kind of guys he's beating. Now, you beat Dustin Poirier. Now, that's a totally different thing. And I think your analogy, Joe, to the Matt Brown, Robbie Lawler situation is exactly correct. And I think even in losing, Matt Brown's stock went up in that fight against Robbie Lawler because of the fight he put up, the way he fought, and against who he lost to. And I think the same is going to be true of Conor McGregor, win or lose. I mean, I think if he wins this fight against Dustin Poirier, forget about it. I mean, he's as big a star as there is, and he's going to be fighting on a massive stage, and he would have proven himself legitimate beating a guy like this. You know, if he loses to Dustin Poirier, well, I think it depends on how he loses. It doesn't automatically say he's not a contender, that he's not very good. It may say he bit off a little too much too soon. You know, hey, if he gets dominated over the period of the fight, you know, we may have to say, well, maybe he's a little bit. So, but I think this is a great fight for him. It's almost like a no-lose event. He's going to get a lot of attention. He certainly made himself into a big celebrity in this sport. And, you know, he may be a championship contender before too long.
Well, I love the fact when potential meets reality and then it's results-based. So, like you said, I'm going to wait till UFC 178 or at least on Sunday morning, early Sunday morning, to determine what I believe in Conor McGregor. Though I do believe he's a star, he's got to prove it eventually in the octagon. Wanderlei Silva, a former star from Pride, obviously a big one in the world of mixed martial arts, even when he came over to the UFC, is in a whole lot of trouble. It continues to get worse for him. Now the commission is looking for legal fees. I mean, this guy is in big trouble. I don't think we're going to see him ever compete again.
No, I think Vanderlei's fighting career is done, and the sad thing is he doesn't seem to understand that. You know, after the previous hearing, I mean, I think he totally misunderstood what he was going into. You know, he went into that last commission hearing, and it was a temporary suspension hearing, and they temporarily suspended him, and he came out thinking, well, I'm clear now, I'll be able to fight. And it's like, no, you're not clear, and you are going to face a very serious penalty. You know, he, in a way, is worse than Chael Sonnen, because Chael Sonnen, I mean, I can't underestimate how massive what he did was wrong. I mean, you know, EPO, HGH, all these things, I mean, that was a really bad cocktail. And the fact that they caught Chael on the second test, you know, where he was caught with three things in his system, and then they test him again, I mean, he didn't have that stuff in the system the first time, so I think what he basically said was, oh, now I'm free to take this other stuff. I'll be able to talk my way out of that with the fertility angle, and I'll take this other stuff now to enhance myself. So that was terrible. But Vanderlei is worse. When you run away from the test, it's even worse. And I think Vanderlei still is going to get hammered. And I know in just private talking to some of the people here, you know, they were fuming about what he did. And I don't think he's going to be treated very easily at all. And I think you're going to see him get a massive penalty. And I think, you know, the 2-year ban that Chael Sonnen got is going to be the minimum that you're going to see with Vanderlei Silva. And if he gets a 2-year suspension, given the fact of, you know, of how the arc of his career has gone, Joe, I mean, I think just like Chael, it's probably over.
Yeah, I'd projected 18 to 24 months. I think I'm going to up that ante a little bit more and take that a little further. Final question for you. It's sort of a weird one. I actually spent some time with the wife who went out to go watch the movie Lucy. And I thought to myself, you know, great movie, love it. Female character, obviously playing some sort of superhero. But my goodness, I couldn't stop thinking about either A, Gina Carano or Ronda Rousey in a role like that. Ronda's talking about potentially being the biggest superstar ever in Hollywood in general, let alone mixed martial arts. How much time do you think she has left before she calls it a career and does Hollywood full time?
Well, you know, Joe, I mean, I think it's going to depend on the money. And right now she's making more money from MMA than she is from the movies. You know, she has committed, her agent Brad Slater from William Morris Endeavor has said she's committed to her fight career. You know, she is a competitive person, and I think that she's going to be able to do both for a while longer than people think. You know, I don't think she's down to her last two or three fights. you know, I think she will fight for quite a while more. I think you'll see her going for a couple of years anyway. But the time is going to come, if she continues to be successful, that, you know, it's going to pass and she's going to make more money. Look, she's saying that she wants to be the biggest actress of all time, although maybe, you know, she does have that as a goal. But she said the top grossing action star, and she mentioned The Rock. So as a female action star, number one, there hasn't been a lot of,
correct,
you know,
yeah,
hugely successful ones. So that's something that I think she has a chance to do. And, you know, number two, you know, going out there, it's going to take a while for her to prove herself as an actress. You know, it takes a long time for a movie to be filmed. You know, people are talking about the Athena Project. Well, they haven't even finished the script on that yet. It's still being developed. So she's got a ways to go. So I think we'll see her fight, you know, for a couple of years more at least.
Will I be seeing you in Sacramento?
I will see you in Sacramento. Looking forward to that one.
Oh, that is going to be fantastic. We'll probably get you on that week to talk about Hayden Burrell and TJ Dillashaw to a fantastic fight. Kevin, thank you very much for your time.
Anytime, Jeff. Appreciate having me on, always.
There you have it. Kevin Ioli. Special thanks to Kevin, of course, the real deal, Ross Pearson, and Lex McMahon for joining us this week on UFC Central. You have been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.